Hello and welcome to the Fit for Privacy podcast, the podcast for those who care about privacy. I'm your host Puneet Bhatia, and here we have conversations with industry leaders about their perspectives, ideas and opinions relating to privacy and data protection matters. Before we start, a quick disclaimer that the views and opinions expressed are not legal advice. So let's get started. Today we have someone who loves working with startups and small businesses. And he also has a business of his own. And he's an electrical engineer. He loves Mandarin Chinese, so we'll need to talk about what and why. He's a lawyer. He's an MBA. And he's a startup founder and small business owner. And what I didn't tell you is he's a specialist in IP law. So IP means intellectual property law. And he's the founder of Miller IP Law. So we're talking about Devin Miller. Devin, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Thank you so much. So what's your story? I mean, I know IP law. What is IP law and how did you get into this?
Yeah, so intellectual property is generally consists of patents, trademarks, copyright. So if you know, kind of break that down, we help businesses protect their brands, their inventions, and their creative works. As far as how I kind of got into it, so I got to the end of undergraduate and I did an electrical engineering degree as my focus. I also did Mandarin Chinese Dimension, but kind of coming out of that, I said, you know, I like being an engineer, but I don't want to be an engineer full time. In other words, I like working on a lot of different projects, like kind of working on technology, but I didn't want to go and work for someone else and be on one project for, you know, months or years at a time, be a very small cog in a big wheel. And I wanted to be able to do more things or, you know, kind of have a more flexible and you know, go through and then do a lot more fun things on that. And so I kind of was getting to the end of that and decided, okay, what can I do? And so, you know, I love business, love startups, also love, you know, kind of the law side and protecting all that. So I went off and did both an MBA degree as well as a law degree, started some businesses, worked as an attorney, and kind of been going back and forth. So kind of with the love of startups and small businesses, thought it would be fun to work with a lot of them to see what they're working on, help them protect their ideas and brands and inventions and whatnot.
Good. So on one side, you are an entrepreneur. On the other side, you are a lawyer, specialist in IP, of course. And then when you talk about protecting brand, protecting IP, there's also the protection of data. And that's where we call off data protection and privacy. So how does that fit into the mix? Or does it fit into the mix?
Yeah, I mean, it fits in the mix on a related note. So, I mean, there is a difference between intellectual property versus data privacy in the sense that now there are some technologies out there that they patented in order to help with data privacy and that, but we'll leave that as maybe a slightly separate discussion. But generally, on the one side, your intellectual property is really helping you to protect the inventions, to protect the creative work. So as an example, I did for a long period of time in a previous firm that I worked at, did some work for Intel. And with the Intel, they had a whole bunch of things, everything from on-chip data security to making it so you can't hack, to enclaves, to how you do that software. So there's a lot that goes into how you go about protecting data privacy, what those security protocols and everything else. Now, on the other end, if you're more of a startup or small business or even a bigger business, unless you're working to create those inventions that help to protect it, you're less worried about the intellectual property side of protecting it. You're more worried about protecting your data such that there isn't a data breach or somebody doesn't get access to it or anything of that nature. And so that's where you then start to use a lot of the technology that they've implemented. So kind of the intellectual property side is on the first side or the first step of how do you go about protecting it. Then you get a patent on it so you can have exclusivity for all your development. And then on the business side, you're saying, okay, now we'd like to use all that technology that they've created such that we can protect our privacy.
Interesting. And we talk about GDPR. And then in this podcast, I often ask, how would you put the general data protection regulation in one word? Or what comes to your mind?
I'd either do one of two words. I'd either say privacy or freedom. In other words, it's either, you know, really it's about protect or giving you the ability to protect your privacy and having the freedom to decide what information you want others to have access to and how they access it. So that's why I'm a bit split between it. It's really on the privacy side, but it's also really also on the freedom side.
Yeah. And I think that's where the two things, IP and privacy, are different, because in privacy,
end of the day, you are seeking freedom. While in the IP, you are seeking control and protecting that it doesn't go. While you are definitely protecting data, but there's it's for the freedom of the data subject. How would you see?
I think that's a good distinction.
Yeah, but how would you see the difference between IP and privacy, or maybe the similarities as well?
Well, I mean, I think that at least fundamentally, they're kind of going towards the same end goal. Now, the way that you protect it with the law and where you go is a bit different. But if you look at kind of what is intellectual property at its core trying to protect, well, it's, hey, if I create something, if I put a whole bunch of time, you know, blood, sweat and tears and effort and money and investment into something that's intellectual. In other words, it's not physical. It's not like, you know, a building or a car or a widget or a phone. It's something that's, you know, less tangible, but I want to be able to, if I'm putting all that effort into it, I want it to be mine. I want it to protect it. I want it to be able to manage how I do it. And that's a lot of times what you're doing with privacy, you know, with a lot of your data, in the sense that, hey, this isn't, again, not physical, it's more intangible, but it's nonetheless still yours. And you may want to use your data, you may want to have others have access to it, or you may want to keep it to yourself. And so at the end of the day, it's kind of that same intangible assets that you own that you're saying, I want to be able to decide how they're used or how others use them. And in the case of intellectual property, use patents or trademarks in order to protect them. In the case of, you know, data privacy, then you're more saying, how do I protect that and how do I get permissions and what laws are in place and those type of things. But that course, I think it's that same thing of, I have something that's an intangible asset of mine, and I want to decide how it's used.
Makes sense. And in that context, why do you believe privacy is important, especially from a small business perspective? Because you talk to a lot of small business. You are a small business yourself as well. So how do you view privacy, not as a lawyer, but as a small business? What's in it from a small business perspective that they need to take care and they need to be part of this compliance?
Yeah, I mean, if I were looking at kind of what is it in it for me or why I would care as a small business, one is, you know, give you an example. A lot of businesses, whether it's products or services or anything else, what helps them to compete on a basis is that they have customer lists. They have databases of is their ideal client. They also have sometimes sensitive information that they don't want others, you know, that people have entrusted them with this sensitive information, whether that's anything from Social Security or whether it's their medical records, whether it's, you know, legal information, whether it's, you know, just email and phone number, all of which are still sensitive. All of those are ones that you want to keep the trust of your customers such that, you know, they feel like they can actually give you that information. It's going to be used properly. They're not going to get on a spam list, so they're forever going to get emails. They're not going to get random, you know, telemarketer calls. They're not going to have, you know, their medical records out in the public, all that. So I think a lot of times with the businesses, it's one of two things. One is that it helps you to compete in the marketplace, figure out who to target, who is your, you know, who do you market to, who's your customer, how do you reach them, how do you compete against other businesses? And then two is maintaining that trust. So as you get clients, that they can feel like they can trust you to keep or continue to keep that information confidential.
Makes sense. And do you think small businesses actually care about all this? Because you as a lawyer, me as a privacy professional, we do because it's our bread and butter. But do you see actually the small businesses being focused on somebody who's setting up a company? Are they caring about IP and privacy and all these stuff?
Yeah, with the IP is probably a different question, and it depends on the business. On privacy, I think that they care about it for a couple of reasons. One is they don't want to get sued. Nobody wants to get a lawsuit, shut down your business, get, you know, put out because you had a data leak or anything else. Two, they also care about their reputation. You know, whether you're a big business, small business, if all of a sudden all your customers come to find out that you got hacked, all their private information, that can hurt your business or can shut it down, both from fines, from legal, and even if there wasn't the legal aspect, customers aren't going to trust you anymore. So I think that they care from that. Now, do they have this moral altruistic, I want to keep your Davis private just because it's yours? Probably less. So they're not necessarily thinking, hey, this is people's private information. They're more saying, I don't want to get sued, I don't want to get closed down, and I want to have a good reputation, all of which require me to have some sort of privacy policy in place and to protect that such that it doesn't harm my business.
So essentially, it's more protection of the business rather than protection of the data subject, but still, the end outcome is still the same. And in that context, when they're more interested in protecting themselves and being on the right side in case they are sued, in case there's a breach. So what challenges do they face in your view and in your region?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues is that if there is a breach or there is a policy issue, oftentimes because it's there, they're trying to protect their reputation, they're trying to avoid fines. Oftentimes they don't want to let their customers know, or they don't want to broadcast that, and they try and fix it internally, or they try and otherwise avoid it or pretend like it's not there. And so, you know, while they have that motivation to do it as before the issue happens, if an issue arises, I think that there can be a conflicting issue to where they try and avoid that. The other thing that I think would be is, you know, once the other conflict that can arise is that they will be sensitive to the information that I think they are either legally required to, that their customers are intentional, but they may use that data in ways that the customer doesn't want. So in other words, customers, I think a lot of people aren't aware of how all their data is probably used by businesses. In other words, to retarget them, to follow them around on the internet. So you always see those ads, you know, you go look at something on Amazon, then it follows you around for all the websites you go on. Well, they, you know, they don't necessarily want that. And so sometimes there's that tension to where businesses want to use that data, even if they keep it private and even if they keep it confidential, they still use that data in ways that customers probably don't want them to, because it's targeting them in a way that isn't beneficial to them.
Makes sense. And how do they address this when you say that there's a challenge around transparency? That is, once a breach has happened, once something has gone wrong, the intention is to limit the exposure towards the general public rather than put it in the domain. And of course, the laws in US do not enforce it, so they are legally entitled to do that. Maybe in some other countries it would be challenging. So how do you help them solve, or how do you see them solving it? Are they solving it, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, I think depending on the industry. So some industries, at least in the US, there's a whole lot of legal penalties if you have data breach. If you get into the medical industry and you get or let medical information get out, you can have major fines. Same thing even with, like, you know, you saw Facebook breaches, or you saw other social media or Yahoo that got hacked, and they can have large, you know, financial impacts when the FCC or SEC or other people get involved based on those breaches. So I think legally there are some repercussions, at least for some industries. Now, when you get to the smaller businesses and startups, is most of the time the customers, either they never find out, and if they do find out, they don't have the ability to really go out and do anything about it, because they're, you know, that one, their customers are small, they don't have the money to fund it, and they don't have the, and even if they go after the small business will probably just go out of business and it won't have any change. But I think, you know, you kind of hit on that, as I think transparency is a bigger thing. In other words, usually the worst part about a data breach isn't the breach, it's the cover up after the fact. And I think a lot of times, if you are forthright and you let the customers know, you know, when they sign up, saying, hey, here's all the things we're doing to make sure, and especially if you're working with a lot of confidential data, here's what we're doing. And, you know, we're not perfect, but we do everything that we know that's been recommended within our power, and we work with it. Now, there's a lot, you know, and then if there's a data breach, be honest with your customers and say, hey, there was this issue. And I think if you get ahead of it and you're honest with them, most of the time they're going to be understanding. And so I think that there's a hesitation, oh, I'll hide this, nobody will find out, and I'll just pretend like it never happens. And if you're on the flip side, if you're to be more honest and forthright with them, a lot of times you'd avoid the issues.
Makes sense. And I think you mentioned a couple of times it's based on the industry, and that's true, because I was talking to a medical devices client last week in the United States, and they want to be compliant with the GDPR, even though they are not yet in EU. The reason being, they see it as a showstopper for them to get access to the EU market. And they also see, even in the US market, having a GDPR compliance would increase their chances and acceptability of their product, as well as they want to go, you know, on the they want to launch an IPO, and they see that as an opportunity in privacy compliance. So there's the drivers are different when in certain industries, and in other industries the challenges, there's lack of awareness as well, because for them privacy is the last thing on the list, because it's first the cash, then the staff, then the action, and then getting in front of clients. And I don't think those kind of companies are putting privacy, or they know about privacy as much as they should.
No, I'd agree. And I think it is one that's coming more to the forefront of mind, and people are paying more attention just because they more out of self-interest. They've seen the negative repercussions. They've seen, you know, businesses get fined. They've seen it, you know, have a negative impact on customers and people leaving the business. And so because it's so prevalent, it tends to be more of a focus or now than it used to be. And I think it will probably continue to shift that way.
Yeah. So if someone was to set up a business and they were to ask you an advice from IP perspective and privacy perspective, what would you tell them?
I would say get a strategy in place. I mean, most of the time, the biggest hurdle, with whether it's IP and getting protecting your intellectual property, whether it's protecting data, is that you don't think about it. You don't, you know, you don't do anything about it. You don't have a strategy in place until it's either too late, you've already had an issue. And a lot of times you're saying, even if it's, hey, we don't have the, we're a small business startup, we don't have the ability to go spend tens of thousands of dollars to do a, you know, make sure that all of our data is secure to the level that everybody suggests, at least have a strategy. Say, okay, as we grow, as we get a bigger business, whether it's I need a patent or I need a trademark, let's factor that into the budget. If I'm working with a lot of sensitive data, as we grow, let's get a plan in place so that as we get bigger, we know what we're going to do so that we can continue to improve and protect on it. So I would say the biggest takeaway is to get that plan in place and to get that figured out ahead of time such that, that you can build or you can keep building in or building that in as you go along.
I think that's very well said. It completely aligns with what I usually say in different words. I say, take informed decisions. So know about what's this privacy or even any other law, then make an approach, make a plan and kind of assess it, what needs to be done when. Take a risk-based informed decision saying, what do you do now and what do you do later, but don't go with, we will do it later. That's not an approach. Having a 2-hour or 4-hour awareness session with an expert would not do any harm. Rather, it can save you a lot in the long term.
Yep, I completely agree.
Yeah, so different words, but it's end of the day, we are saying the same thing. And I'm so happy to hear that, that it resonates with you. And by the way, for the listeners, it was not planned. Planned meaning we didn't align on it before our strategy. So yep. You mentioned that on a side note, apart from privacy and everything, that you are interested or fascinated or intrigued by Mandarin Chinese. What's that?
Yeah, so really that started with, so I served a religious mission for my church, so Church of Jesus Christ or Latter-day Saints, or sometimes nicknamed Mormon. So when I was 19, I did a year of college, decided I wanted to go serve a religious mission for my church. So I ended up going and serving in Taiwan, which is Mandarin speaking. And so I picked up the language initially when I went over there, lived a couple years there in Taiwan and served that mission. And then when I came back to college, I decided, well, I'd like to continue to improve my language ability. So I added on as a second degree as I was going through school. So kind of started with the religious mission for my church and evolved from there.
Interesting. And you also have this, the Inventive Journey podcast. Tell us something about it.
Yeah, so the Inventive Journey is a podcast I started about a year ago or so, somewhere right around there. And it was where, you know, I've done several startups myself, and I've also worked with a ton of startups and small businesses. And, you know, one of the things that I found is a commonality throughout all of them is while they all have different journeys, it is always a lonely journey in the sense that, you know, most people don't know what it's like to do hiring and firing, marketing, sales, product development, being the janitor, doing payroll, doing taxes, and kind of all of those. And one week you feel like you're a success and the next week you feel like you're a failure. And so kind of with all of that, started the podcast really with the focus on telling the journey of how people got to where they're at today and sharing that, hey, it's not always a simple journey. It's not always just, you know, the overnight success. Overnight successes are usually 10 years in the making and kind of sharing that journey. And so the podcast really focuses on, you know, kind of how people got to where they're at today and kind of what that journey and what they're, how they weave to get to where they're at.
I can vouch for it's a roller coaster. And every day, not even every week, you have a feeling. One day it feels like, okay, you have clients and it's coming. And then you have two discussions and it seems like, okay, everything will be fine in a few days. And then two clients don't come. And next day you are thinking, because you have light on some client work and you think like, oh, is it going to work? And it yep. is amazing.
Absolutely. Yep. I used to always say it was a roller coaster, and I had, and I can't take credit for it, but somebody was actually on the podcast said, you know, it's not really as much of a roller coaster. It's more like the whole theme park. You know, you get into the parking lot and you're excited to go in, and it, you know, it's fun and exciting. And then you get in and you go on a few roller coasters and you get sick and you have to take a break because you're not feeling well. And then you go, you know, binge eat on a whole bunch of food and it's fun for a little while. Then you go with the other ride, you throw up, then you go on the bumper cars, you get banged around, and you know, it's kind of that whole theme park experience, because there's a whole bunch of different parts of your journey that all are different, and some are exciting and fun and others make you a little sick or you have to take a break from. So I always kind of think it is the whole theme park, I think, is a pretty good analogy.
It is indeed a theme park, because compared to a job, in a job you get a fixed salary, so you can plan your expenses and you are usually easy on your expenses, even the overheads, like, okay, we can do this, we can do. But when you are an entrepreneur, the challenge is you are initially first few years, you are the person who's making things happen. So if you take a holiday, if you make the expenses, then there's not enough cash for the business. So how do you manage that? And how do you then balance out that you want to save, but you want to invest because you also want to grow your clients? And it's a consistent struggle, because if you don't invest, you don't earn. And if you don't save, then you're not securing your future. And it is completely different experience. I can vouch for that.
Absolutely.
So the other question I had was just a fun question. Between health and wisdom, what would you choose and why?
Health and wisdom. I'd probably choose wisdom when I'm younger and health when I'm older, because I want the wisdom to know what to do when I'm younger when I don't have it. When you're older, you have the wisdom, but then you don't have the health. So probably depends on or what point in life I'm referring to. Probably right now I focus more on wisdom because my health is pretty good, but I'd probably say if my health wasn't good, the health is a lot more important. So yeah. I'll go with health, but I kind of give a, it depends on the stage of life I'm in.
Yeah, that's a dilemma, because if you focus on health and you don't have wisdom, you will not take care of health. But if you have wisdom and you don't have health, then it's again an issue. So it's a tough one, Che. It's like the chicken and the egg story. But so thank you so much for your time. And if I may ask you, if somebody wants to contact you, how can they get in touch with you? What's the best way?
Yeah, absolutely. So easiest way to reach out, connect up with me is if you just go to strategymeeting.com, all one word, strategymeeting.com. That connects. That's a way that you can go on. You can grab some time on my calendar. If you have questions about privacy, patents, trademarks, intellectual property, other things with your business, you can go on there. It links right to my calendar. You can grab a day and time that works for you. We can set aside some time. We can chat. We can connect and make sure you get taken care of. So if listeners go to strategymeeting.com, great way to connect with me.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful way. I can understand why you coach small businesses, because you have set it very clear. Strategymeeting.com, go there.
Yep.
So thank you so much for your time. It was wonderful to have you, and we look forward to seeing you very soon in person, maybe.
Absolutely. I appreciate you having me on. It was great to chat and look forward to meeting in person sometime.
Thanks for listening. And now we ask you for some help. Take a moment to subscribe and review this podcast. Your support matters. And if you have done it already, thank you so much. Now, if you have questions or suggestions, drop an email at hello@fitforprivacy.com. And finally, if you know someone who will benefit from this, share this podcast with them and help us grow. Thank you so much. Stay safe and see you next time.